Welcome back here on Can't Wait, where we pick up where we left off with the New York Knicks. We spent a lot of time busting on the New York Knicks because they've been real silly for the last few years, but I kind of like this team this year. I kind of like them a little. What do you think, Matt?
I'm wondering if it's sort of a Schadenfreude and like you like them the way that like you like maybe watching like a video of a kid on a trampoline who gets stuck in a basketball hoop or something.
I don't know if that kid can score like Carmelo Anthony can.
Yeah.
I like that clip just fine because
yeah.
I do feel like they have professionals on the team.
They do. They have certainly more than they did last year.
They won 17 games last year.
Yeah.
That was less than the Sixers.
Right.
I think there's no choice for them but to be better.
No, I agree. There's no question they're better. They have, you know, at least now 6 or 7 NBA players, whereas last year there were times when they had 0.
Yes.
So there's no question they're better. I don't think that they are better in a way that matters, though.
Well, matters is tough in the East.
Sure.
Because Carmelo Anthony, if healthy, is still impossible to guard. Mm-hmm. He just is. And in the East, let's say he plays 70 games.
Sure.
Is that enough for them to win 38? Because that's in the mix for the playoffs.
So here are the factors we have to think about when you look at the Knicks winning 38 games, right? So a 20-win jump is a lot of wins, right? And you have to look on the roster and where those are coming from. So part of it is you're expecting that you're going to have, you know, a healthy Carmelo Anthony.
And not just healthy, but like prideful.
Yeah.
Furious about what happened last
right.
year.
Right. Healthy and engaged.
Yes.
Well, he played 40 games last year. You know, it's not like they had nothing from him.
Right.
He played 40 games, and he actually played at a level that, at least statistically, though not as good as the two previous seasons, was pretty in line with who he has been over the last 5 or 6 years.
I'm going to throw 10 of those games out because he played in those so he can play in the All-Star game, which was about the dumbest thing that I could ever remember happening in any NBA season.
That was stupid.
That was really stupid.
Yeah, and could have gone worse than it did.
Really, yeah, they're actually very fortunate.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that Carmelo is still a very good offensive player. You know, I think that another year in the triangle, he'll be a little bit more comfortable than he was last season. But I still don't think that he is enough to single-handedly carry a team to the high 30s in wins at this stage in his career.
But that's where we start talking about Robin Lopez. We start because I think that's a nice 5 for this team.
Yeah.
I think he's a really smart, savvy player who is better than people think.
Mm-hmm.
I think we start talking about Aaron Aflalo, who has not been as good the last couple years, but is still such a major upgrade on what they've had. I think we start talking about Jose Calderon being one of the best shooters in the league if he can stand still and doesn't have to move. I think that's where we start talking about. I think Porzingis actually plays a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think we're talking I like Kevin Serafin. I like mm-hmm. Kyle O'Quinn. I mean, I like their big man rotation. We're not Derek Williams guys anymore. We've spent way too much time in Tucson, Arizona trying to justify the Derek Williams experience. He's just not a good NBA player.
No.
But
that's not going to change.
I like Lopez, Serafin, and O'Quinn. I think those were all really sneaky, savvy signings.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that they're going to play a lot of Carmelo at the 4. Because that's just, you look at the depth chart at the 4, it's not there.
Yeah.
I think that's where he is at his most devastating.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 38 is like best case scenario. Every single thing goes right and nobody misses any games.
Right.
I think this is more of like a low 30s, but that's still like, that's a big jump from last year. And I think it's in large part because they have professional basketball players on this roster.
I agree. And I think that, you know, low 30s, high 20s is definitely a reasonable expectation. But let's really step back and think about what that means. I mean, this is the Knicks.
Yeah.
And obviously, the Knicks have been bad for a long time, but they're also a team that are expected, at least, to at least be competitive right now. You know, since the Carmelo deal, I think the floor of expectations has been raised, and you know, fans reasonably expect that the team should be competing for a playoff spot. I think that, you know, Phil Jackson, that there's pressure on him to be putting out at least a respectable competitive team. And the thing that worries me is that because of the pressure cooker of expectations that come along with playing in New York, I worry that if this team gets off to a bad start, And that's very plausible because they've got a lot of new pieces to integrate and a coach who does not have a demonstrated track record of being able to do that.
I think he sucks.
Derek Fisher's this whole Matt Barnes thing.
That's ugly.
Is ugly. And I think it's just another sign that there's bad juju going on around him and around.
I honestly cannot believe he landed a head coaching job after what he did as head of the players union. Yeah. I don't know how any player can look at him without wanting to punch him in the face for what he meant to that lockout. And I don't think he's good. I think he was a demonstrably bad coach, whether or not they were tanking or not. They didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a built-in ceiling always if Derek Fisher's on your sideline.
Yeah. And of the guys that they added, you know, you have to really be optimistic about some of the projections to expect they're going to make a big impact. Aaron Aflalo has been a bad NBA player for a couple of years, not just an average or a blow average. He was bad last year.
That was not a good stretch in Portland.
Yeah.
And it should have been fine.
And you know, I think that once we're dealing with a guy who's, you know, he's actually turning 30 in a week or so. He's another guy. He's not going to get any better. He is who he is. His defensive reputation has outpaced his performance for probably 6 or 7 years now. It's been, you know, since his first couple seasons that he was really a truly, you know, good defender. So compared to what they had last year, is he better? Yeah, I guess probably, but still not a starting shooting guard. Jose Calderon was bad last year, and as another guy on the wrong side of 30, I don't think we can necessarily expect that he's going to get demonstrably better. And even in his best season, is probably the worst defensive point guard in the league.
He's a disaster defensively, but boy, can he shoot the ball.
Yeah, he can.
Oh my God, he can shoot the ball.
But, you know, again, to what end? I mean, I just think that this team, though better, and I like Kyle O'Quinn and Serafin and Robin Lopez, and they are a better team, no question. But I still think that this is going to be a team with a lot of negative feelings around it, because for Carmelo, I don't think he wants to play on a 31-win team where at the end of the year that you look back and you say, yeah, that's about what we should have been, 31 wins. So I think that there's a chance that this thing really goes downhill if it becomes clear in January that once again this team is not making the playoffs, that, you know, that next year is not going to be all that better, that they really do need to just be patient and build around Porzingis and let, you know, find young guys and let them develop. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, come January, we start to hear the Carmelo trade talk start to get going again.
That would be so good. They just need to do it.
Yeah.
For everyone involved, it just needs to happen. There's places in the league for him that aren't this.
Mm-hmm.
And if this team was just to be like all about Porzingis and Jerry and Grant and trying to be fun and like what the Timberwolves are, but with nowhere near as good prospects as Wiggins and Towns.
Yeah.
But I do think that a healthy, engaged Carmelo Anthony playing a lot of power forward is a team that can win a lot of games in the East. Not enough to really matter, but more than 17.
I think that there are enough. Like, we've talked about a lot of teams in the East being better. Well, they've got to win against somebody.
Yeah.
I think the Knicks are going to be one of the teams they win against. So I
them in Brooklyn, just that whole borough that whole stretch of coast is not going to be good.
Not going to be good. I think 29 to 31 wins is what I have.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable spot to put them. But I think that there is a scenario where Carmelo Anthony is among the top five scores in the league again.
Yep.
And they just have a nice little run and get people excited for the 8 seed and ultimately don't get it.
That could happen.
We go to the most interesting team in the league next, the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think the whole season's about these guys. I think that this season means more to them than it does to anybody else. I think they've got the highest ceiling and of the title contenders, the lowest floor.
Mm-hmm.
I think they win the title. What do you think, Matt?
I think that what you said is right on the money in terms of high ceiling, low floor. I think if they don't win the title, that they have...
This era is over.
Yeah, they have real concerns about
this. We're reaching the end of this story.
Yeah.
How's the story going to end? We'll know this year.
Now, I am not optimistic about this team.
It's a bad injury their best player has.
That's the problem. I want this to be one of the best teams in the league because the league is more interesting when they are, and the league is more interesting when Russell Westbrook gets to play in meaningful games and when you get to see the strange dance that he and Kevin Durant have done together for the last several years. And it's interesting to think about what Billy Donovan is going to be able to do in his first season as a pro coach. But there are a couple things that I don't like. The Kevin Durant injury, I mean, that's a hard injury to come back from. It's one that last year, you know, he had...
Took him out two separate times.
Yeah, and you know, there's not a great track record of guys being able to come back and then just have a clean bill of health. No problems again. Foot problems for a guy who, let's face it, he's a 7-footer.
He's very tall.
You know, he may be a perimeter player, but he's still putting a lot of pressure on that foot. And what worries me is a situation where because of the expectations that they have for this season and because of the sense that with Durant's impending free agency that, you know, there's a lot of pressure to make this season count. I worry that, and also for Durant personally, that I think that he probably hated having to sit out so many games last season and hated having to see this team miss the playoffs, you know, because of that in large part. And I'm worried that he comes back, that December, January rolls around, he starts to feel a little funky in the foot and just keeps kind of rolling through it, and that something bad happens again. And I'm not a doctor, and I'm not going to pretend that I know anything about how his foot is healing, but I know that these are injuries that are historically are hard to recover from. And I think because of the combination of the difficulty of the injury and the weight of expectations facing the season, that there is a risk of either overexertion or that there's pressure, you know, not to take 3 weeks off just to for sort of routine maintenance. And that's what scares me, is that, you know, I don't have confidence that this team is going to be healthy coming into the postseason.
I feel like Billy Donovan being a grown-up where Scott Brooks was their buddy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know the dynamic of that locker room, but I felt like Scott Brooks was so loyal to guys like Kendrick Perkins and just did not want to tell guys, no, you can't be out there. I feel like that really hurt them, in addition to the lack of spacing he provided on offense. I just think there were a lot of things he did well as a coach in terms of getting these guys to buy in and showing them the ropes and developing them and all that kind of thing. But that next little level where you got to be the grown-up in the room that says, no, you can't be out there. I think that is where Billy Donovan makes his money this year, because he doesn't have these relationships with these guys. They're bringing him in as the CEO of the team, basically. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a really smart guy who's waited a very long time and even backed out of an NBA job before this to know when to take the right job. Yeah. I like him for this team. I think this is the Jackson to Kerr of this year. I think that Durant stays healthy only because I think it's not fair that we didn't get to see him last year. Mm-hmm. And guys that good don't miss more than a couple years of their prime unless it's like a Bill Walton thing. And I just refuse to believe that Kevin Durant's our Bill Walton. I'm not ready for it.
Yeah.
I feel like not getting to see Russell Westbrook in the playoffs last year was just a disaster. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Russ is furious about it right now.
Yeah.
And has been furious about it for months. I feel like if Durant, Russ, and Serge Ibaka can go in the playoffs, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
I don't care about any of the other stupid things their front office has done. Mm-hmm. I don't care about that horrible Enes Kanter contract.
Yeah.
I don't care that Dion Waiters is here.
Right.
I don't care about any of that. Durant, Russ, Serge. Healthy, they win.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I don't know, but yeah. I feel like I'm going to pick them to win the title because I feel like they should be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this team should have a title. And yeah. I think it should have happened a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in a league where the top 7 or 8 teams are so closely bunched together, their urgency and their edge to like this year means more to them than it does to anybody out. The only other team that is in this conversation is the Clippers.
Because
I feel like a lot of those guys think if they don't win the title this year, they got to break it up, which I think is stupid.
Right.
But I feel like that's actually what's going to happen in Oklahoma City. They don't win it this year. I think Durant looks at these last couple of years where he didn't really trust the Oklahoma City trainers, and he doesn't like how they handled it, and he doesn't like what they got for Harden still, even though they don't talk about it anymore. I mean, this Jeremy Lamb is barely in the league. They all know he's a bum.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of...
And it's not even on this roster.
No. And should have never been on this
right.
roster.
Yeah.
So for this to have all happened, and for him to be at this point of his career with no rings, and all the rest of the teams that are in this mix having either just won or having guys that have won before, I think this means so much to them this year for Durant, Russ, and Serge that if they don't win it this year, that's the worst thing that can happen to any of the other contenders. That's why I've got them winning, because there's going to be an edge to them. And I feel like there's no way to really mismatch them. You know, like any kind of stylistic thing doesn't really matter with these guys, because I want to bring up something Ty Lawson said. Ty Lawson gave that interview to Woj where he said, "I was watching Steph Curry in the finals and they weren't making him work. I promise." You know, he was right, but he's not the guy. He's not the guy to be saying that, because people remember he was the guy that got smoked by Steph Curry. He didn't make him work at all.
Right.
And the whole reason that the Denver Nuggets don't exist anymore is because of him.
Right.
Anyway, he wasn't wrong. The guy that's going to make Steph Curry work is Russell Westbrook. That's the guy none of these guards want to see in the playoffs. You think Chris Paul wants any part of Russ for 7 games?
Yeah.
I mean, Steph definitely doesn't. Harden doesn't. None of these guys. Russ keeps coming. Russ is ridiculous. So, yeah, it all depends on Durant's foot. But if Durant's foot can maintain and get them there, and, you know, of course, he's impossible to guard. He's Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Russ is going to get there, and he's going to bulldoze these other point guards.
Yeah.
And whether or not he's going to be efficient in doing it, I don't know. But I don't see if those three are in there, I don't see a team that can mismatch them out of a 7-game series.
Yeah.
It's all health for me.
It is all health. I agree. Another element of this, though, that at least makes me nervous, and you know, time will tell whether that's justified, is the combination of Russ and Billy Donovan.
Yeah.
Bring, you know, the knock in the past on college coaches who come to the NBA is that they, you know, kind of approach it in the same way where they think of it as a system that, you know, they expect guys
I'm the boss.
They're the boss. They expect the guys to treat them the same way that the college players do, where, you know, you're the boss, you're the GM, you're the CEO, you're everything.
Yeah.
And Russ is not going to take that.
No.
You know,
Nor
should he. Yeah. Cause that's not the way the NBA works. But if Billy Donovan wants them running really structured sets and, you know, in crunch time where, you know, Russ is going to be a decoy and, you know, they're going to run a set for Serge Ibaka to get, you know, an open shot at three, I don't know if Russ is going to be happy with that situation. And winning cures all. You know, if they're winning and Durant is healthy and they're having fun, then, you know, maybe it's not an issue. But that's going to be one of the biggest challenges for Billy Donovan, I think, is figuring out how do you connect with NBA personalities and get them to buy in without making them feel like you're condescending to or, you know, patronizing them. You know, there's not a huge track record for college coaches of being able to figure that out, at least not right away.
He's not one of those guys like Pitino, though. Like, Pitino came to the Celtics saying, "We're going to press and all you guys are expendable."
Right.
That was stupid.
Yeah.
That was never going to work. We're seeing it happen right now with the Philadelphia Eagles. Chip Kelly is crashing and burning for a lot of the same reasons.
Yeah.
Billy Donovan is more of a personality than he is a structured set guy. And a lot of the success he had as the coach of the under 22 international team was because he was able to connect with talented dudes.
Yeah.
It's not, but I don't think he treats these kids as expendable. I always thought that was kind of what kept Florida in the mix, even if the recruits weren't there.
Yeah.
He was always able to treat these guys with respect and do what worked and be malleable, regardless of who he had there. I think Russ will respond to the extra space very favorably. I think he's going to see, like, oh, I've been playing for Scott Brooks and just Scott Brooks.
Yeah.
And then before that, Ben Howland. And he's going to see, oh, no, basketball can be kind of fun and opened up. And I do see that there could be a clash there, because Russ could clash with anyone at any time.
Yeah.
He's kind of a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
I think Billy Donovan's the right dude, though. Mm-hmm. I think just him specifically is the right dude. Gut feeling. No way to know.
Yeah. No way to know. But, you know, I don't think you're crazy to pick them for winning the championship. I also don't think it's crazy to think that, you know, this team could lose in the first round of the playoffs.
You know,
if they're not healthy and right, and it just and if
and then they just don't have enough guys.
Yeah, because you know we've talked exclusively about Russ, Ibaka, and Durant, and for good reason. You know there are a lot of question marks on this roster outside of them. Steven Adams and Enes Kanter at the center. Steven Adams is fine. I
like him with Ibaka. You have to have like a head knocker hustle dude.
Yeah,
I like when he's in there. I don't like when Enes Kanter plays at all, ever, for anybody.
No, not at all.
He can score.
Yeah.
He can score. He can get buckets.
But like, who looks at this roster and says, you know what we need? We need another guy who can go out there and get buckets.
And cannot play defense and is the worst dude.
Yeah.
Like, the Kanter contract is the worst contract in the league right now.
Yeah.
And right after that is Deion Waiters. These are two guys that I wouldn't have within 20 feet of a team that has playoff aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
And they have both of them.
Yeah. And they, you know, they also have a dearth of, you know, veteran role players as well who have experience, you know, finding a role in the playoffs and are used to the grind. I mean, obviously, you know, Ibaka, Westbrook, and Durant are veterans now who have that kind of experience. But in terms of the role players, I mean, you go down the roster and Nick Collison is the only big that really falls into that category. And you know, I like Nick Collison, but you
give him
really
20 minutes. It's fouls and red face.
Yeah,
you know, it's that I'm exhausted. I've been running too hard.
Right.
But I think they think Mitch McGarry and all these guys can kind of chip in for these 10-minute stretches.
Yeah.
And be weird and have energy and knock heads.
Right. Among the wings, though, I mean, Anthony Morrow, great shooter.
That's
but
all.
That's it. Deion, we've already said enough about him.
Shouldn't play.
Yeah. You know, Kyle Singler.
I like.
Yeah, I thought that was...
I like that one.
You know, he's somebody who has not had an opportunity to be successful, but it's not necessarily because of lack of ability.
I think he closes a lot of games. I think their closing five a lot of the time is going to be DJ Augustine, Russ, Singler, Durant, Ibaka.
Yeah.
I think that's how they're going to close a lot of games.
And, you know, we'll have to see if Roberson's able to be anything more than just a really good defender. It seems like he's filling kind
he's
of the Tabo role. But...
He's so boring, that guy.
Yeah.
Are we feeling Cameron Payne? They took him 12th.
Well, I think that the vision, obviously, is you lose Reggie Jackson. Let's bring in someone who can fill that kind of role.
Who's a better guy.
Yeah, who's a better guy. But I think it's a lot to ask for a rookie to be a meaningful rotation player on a team that has the kind of aspirations that they have, especially when they've got DJ Augustine as well. So it's not like they have to rely on Cameron Payne to do anything this year.
Right.
So I think, you know, he's a flyer for the future. And you know, I don't have a problem with the pick. Why not? But I hope that this is an exciting feel-good story because it could go the other way. And if it does, it's going to be very depressing.
You know, we've been talking about Billy Donovan a little bit. We're going to segue into the Orlando Magic, the team he spurned originally when he first got hired for a lot of money to coach in the NBA, but split. I think if he had to do it over again, he'd be happy to coach the squad they have now because there's a lot of fun young pieces. Does this team win games, though, or are they just fun? What do you think?
I actually have the Magic in the Bucks role this year of the young team that people think is going to be good in the future, but that take a leap sooner than expected.
It was 25 wins last year, which is not enough for the talent on hand.
Mm-mm.
They made another coaching upgrade into Scott, from Jacques Vaughn to Scott Skiles.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Skiles is like the Larry Brown of a few years ago, where he comes in and he wins immediately and burns all bridges after 3 years. But it's year one.
Yeah, it's year one. And this team has been in rebuilding mode for so long that at a certain point, you got to figure out, you know, if this core has any kind of real potential. And Scott Skiles, by, you know, coming in and getting a guy who is going to get immediate results and maximize defensive effort right out of the gate, I think that they can kind of figure out, is this a team that is worth, is this core worth building around, or do we need
to... Who do we keep? Who do we ship?
Yeah, because they've got decisions to make about some of these guys coming up, and, you know, I thought that the Tobias Harris extension was smart given what the market was. I think that he's still insanely young.
Oh, yeah.
And very productive. But...
And good in all the ways you want to be good in today's NBA.
Yeah, yeah. But you look at this roster, and there are interesting young players at every position, and a lot of guys who you can, without much effort, imagine Scott Skiles turning into the kind of defenders that they projected to be coming out of college. Mm-hmm. So Oladipo is a guy who projected to be a great defender, has not been a good defender yet, but he has the tools. Elfrid Payton, good defender, can be a great defender. Aaron Gordon, good defender, could be
should
a great defender.
Should be Andre Kirilenko.
Yeah, exactly. So I like this team in the high 30s, actually.
I think this is the most fun team in the East that has no real championship aspirations. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's weird because these are the teams that always seem to really do a lot of action on over-under bets and then kill everybody because they're still just not ready to win games.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you look up and down this roster and it's like, these are all guys you want on your fantasy team. These are all guys that make a lot of fun highlights and do mm-hmm. a lot of things, but they just keep losing by six.
Yeah.
Because who's the guy you say, go get us buckets at the end of the game? Right now it's
Super
Tobias
Mario.
Harris. Yeah, well, that's, we got to talk about Hezonja because... Yeah. I think he's the guy that takes this team to the next level in 2 years.
Right.
But what does that mean for 2015-16? A lot of fun highlights. I think they win way more than 25. Mm-hmm. But are they better than the Pistons?
You know, that's actually, it's funny, because that's the team I was thinking about this in the context of. And
I like them way more than the Pistons for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love this roster.
Yeah.
They win more games than the Pistons this year.
I think they will. I ultimately, coming down to it, I think they will. And I think it's for two reasons. I think one is that with the guys that are on this roster and with what Scott Skiles always does, I think this is going to be a very good defensive team. But I also think that unlike the Pistons, I think that they have a little bit of a more balanced roster.
Totally.
And the Pistons...
The pieces fit better.
Yeah, they fit better. And with the Pistons, it's all on Andre Drummond, pretty much.
Yeah. A guy you can't play at the end of games.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that. That's, you know, he's a guy who, if you're building around him, but then your team's identity has to change for the last 5 minutes of every game, I think that that's a real challenge. With the Magic, you know, I think that they don't have to rely on just that one guy. And if, you know, Payton and Oladipo and Gordon and Harris and, you know, all these young, talented guys just continue to develop in the way that you would expect people at their age to develop, and they all move forward, and it's kind of in the same rate.
Beautiful age curve. Beautiful yeah. job by Rob Hennigan, the GM.
Yeah. So I like this team as the team that emerges 1 year sooner than expected. I could have egg on my face. They could win 17 games, but I think that that they're going to win 35 games. I don't think they're going to make the 8 spot, but I think that they win 35. I think the Pistons are probably right neck and neck with them, 34, 35 wins.
I think we know exactly what we have in Payton, Oladipo, and Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Vucevic, too. I see Vucevic as not necessarily a guy you have to keep long term, but we know exactly who these dudes are.
And Vucevic is, you know, he's one of those weird guys who he's basically a 2010 guy.
So many stats.
But nobody's really sure if he's a good player
right.
or not. But he definitely will get you stats.
Yes, he can, and he's one of the best back to the basket scorers. He's got mm-hmm. a lot of different moves, a lot of different yeah. tricks. But if I know what I have in those three guys.
Mm-hmm.
There are two guys on this team that can take a leap that we don't know about and make them even a 40 win team.
Mm-hmm.
If Hezonja is ready to go right now, because
mm-hmm.
he looks like a star.
Yeah.
He looks awesome when he's got it going, but. This is a big transition. It's a lot to ask.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon can hit jumpers now. Mm-hmm. Before he got clocked in the jaw by his brother, you know, just screwing around, being stupid.
Yeah.
He was knocking down spot-up jumpers in Summer League with mm-hmm. good form, repeatable form, and mm-hmm. it wasn't looking fluky.
Yeah.
It's Summer League. You know, everybody's got that thing, the best shape of my life. I've added a three-pointer to my blah, blah, blah.
I spent a week with Kareem.
I've been in Hakeem Olajuwon's gym.
Yeah, yeah.
This looked real.
Uh-huh.
This looked like a real thing. If Aaron Gordon is not just a hustle Kenneth Faried guy, but he's actually a guy that hits shots, holy moly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him, and it's Hezonja, and it's these physical, tough, smart guards, and it's Tobias Harris, who is who projects as a two-way player. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe not two-way, 3-4. He can play both spots.
Yeah.
Swing between both. That's interesting. That's really interesting. If I'm a fan of the Orlando Magic, this is the most fun I have rooting for a team since the Stan Van Gundy, Dwight, mm-hmm. Rashard, Haydu
yeah.
finals team.
Yeah.
Because everything that happens this year is gravy. Mm-hmm. You're definitely winning more than 25, but you don't think you're winning the title.
Yeah.
Right now is fun.
Yeah.
And I would like all my guys. There's nobody on this roster where I'm like, oh, God, we got to watch him play.
Yeah,
I think this is a fun ride. Even when Evan Fournier gets in there, he's doing stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he's still you know, a guy who you forget about him, but he's only 22 years old.
Yes, and he can slash and do funny things
yeah.
and look odd and be hard to guard.
Yeah,
Channing Frye is still here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best 3-point shooting 7-footer in the league still.
Yeah,
I mean, Jason Smith can make plays. Mm-hmm. There's nobody on this roster to me that's a bum that's going to see minutes.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think that's going to serve them well going forward.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the next team we're going to talk about, the Philadelphia 76ers, I still see a lot of bums, mm-hmm. but that's by design. Are they actually going to try to win some games this year?
Well, I think that last year they won, what, 18 games?
Yeah.
Like that?
Not the worst record in the league.
Yeah. But, you know, really, what's different between this year and last year? Well, they've got Okafor.
And Okafor could go 2010 this year.
Yeah.
Okafor could have, like, Al Jefferson's 2014, just because of opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there it's easy to see that happening. But by the same token, there's going to be an adjustment period for him. You know, as polished as he is, he's still getting used to playing against guys who are as big as him.
Oh, yeah.
And he hasn't done that his whole life.
And he wasn't very good at it in college when it happened.
And in summer league, was not great. I mean, shot in the 40s, I think.
When you're 8 feet from the hoop, you can't be doing that.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, even, and I hate to put really any stock in preseason, but even so, we've seen that in the preseason games as well. Like on Thursday night, he was 4-for-12.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who his whole thing, the whole reason that he was as high a prospect as he was that he from day one is a highly polished offensive big man. So if he's going to be an inefficient scorer and a high volume inefficient scorer, then he doesn't necessarily win them any more games. Somebody's got to take those shots. And I guess maybe you'd rather have Okafor taking them than, you know, Hollis Thompson or whoever was taking them last year. But I don't think that we can expect him to take this team on his back, you know, and single-handedly win 6, 7, 8 more games than they did before.
It's unfair to ask him to do that.
Now, the difference between last year and this year, though, is that I do think that they at least have, at all 5 starting positions, they have a player who is either an interesting prospect long-term or a credible NBA rotation player.
Somebody who belongs in the league.
Yeah.
Robert Covington proved he belonged in the league last year.
Yeah. He is
good for him.
He's a rotation player. He deserves a spot in the league. He could be a useful player on a good team. He's not going to be a star. He probably shouldn't be anything better than your 6th or 7th best guy. But he can be a quality player on a good team.
Which in Philadelphia means you are going to be a top 10 fantasy player at your position. That's just what that means.
Yeah.
Kendall Marshall is a nice signing for these guys mm-hmm. because That's a point guard you want to make the other guys better when you don't have any aspirations of winning games. Mm-hmm. You know, he's actually a guy that can move the ball and should be a third guard on a good team.
Yeah.
And really had a nice run. Was it Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yeah, nice run.
Before his injury.
Yeah. Oh, I've always enjoyed him. Mm-hmm. He seems like he's going to be have a nice after basketball career, too. He seems really smart and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Big
mm-hmm.
fan.
Yeah.
Still, this is Kendall Marshall. We got Nick Stauskas.
Yeah.
We love the Stauskas deal. That was really smart. Anytime you can poach the Kings for nothing, they gave up nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Nick Stauskas, who was a lottery pick.
Yeah.
He's going to bomb away. This is a real nice chance to see if this guy belongs in the league.
Yeah.
He's got, I mean, it's every opportunity. And I'm a Nerlens Noel fan.
Yeah.
I think there's always going to be a spot for dudes like him in the league because he just does so many things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's a starter right now. You know, he's still so raw.
But he was, by the end of last year, he was one of the 15 best defensive players
in the
league.
He's so good. He's so rangy because it's not just blocks. You know, a lot of these guys, they just compile blocks because they're around the... No, he closes out. He gets steals. He's making things happen. He disrupts.
Yeah.
He can cover the pick and roll out to the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
He can push guards back. I mean, he just blows up sets.
Yeah.
And then he can recover back to his man and still do the rim protecting they need him to do. I think he's magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
His offensive game is a work in progress, but I don't think it's as bad. I don't think he's a disaster there. I think he can... I mean, at worst, he's a role man like Tyson Chandler or DeAndre Jordan.
And, you know, we got to remember, even though he was drafted 2 years ago, he was a rookie last year.
Right.
And as a rookie, still had... pretty solid numbers. He showed improvement and showed, you know, actual offensive skills. And
so when does Hinkie trade him?
Yeah.
I mean, how many first round picks is he worth now? Three?
Right. Yeah.
My whole problem with the Sixers and this whole strategy, I mean, yes, you don't want to be in the middle, but you're still charging fans for this for 3 years now. If the tickets were half price, or they were working out some sort of deal where it's like, you buy season tickets now, we give you a deal on the next year. If they were doing something to incentivize your paying customers for this plan instead of charging what they're charging full on the whole time, I think it's a total ripoff. And I think that just philosophically, the argument that the future always matters more than the present, I think is... wrong in a life way.
Yeah.
Like, I find this to be, my worldview does not jive with this because I think that it's still the reason we watch sports is to have fun, and you know, only one team wins the title, but the now still matters. We can still enjoy watching games today. To toss out 3 years just doesn't matter. We're building, trust the process. I think that is just such a flawed way to look at life. I find him offensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get it. I understand. I can even understand from a fan's perspective where if I were a 76ers fan, I think I could kind of talk myself into the delusion of,
you know, what you're doing.
Yeah. Like, oh, you know, we had our chance being a mediocre team for years and years, and that was no fun.
It's so weird to root for the GM to be smart, though.
Right.
Like, that's such a strange thing to be a fan of, sports wise.
It is. And I also think that
it's like rooting for stocks.
Right. Yeah.
That's so dumb.
But I think that the big problem I have with the Hinkie model, and the jury's still out, because you know what? If it turns out that Okafor's a stud and Noel's a stud and Embiid comes back and healthy, yep. And
that's how he gets you.
Yeah,
it's these ifs.
Yeah,
magical ifs.
Right, and then all of a sudden, you know, they have, you know, four or five elite guys who are on their roster or you know as
and
assets.
All these picks and all these second rounders. Wait.
It could happen. And it seems like the ownership is patient enough to kind of see it through at least till the end of this round of guys.
Yeah.
You know, if Noel's a bust, Okafor's a bust, Embiid's a bust, you don't get to play again, you know, and start over. But the issue that I have with it is that 3 years is a long time in the NBA, and it's a long time because there's so much roster turnover.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have, you know, 6-7 year contracts like you do in baseball.
Right.
We're seeing more short-term contracts now. And, you know, within that period of time, you also see good if not great, NBA players who emerge from spots outside of the top three as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, a top three pick is not a slam dunk in the NBA. Your odds are better than they are picking 10 through 15, but
they're not foolproof.
But they're not foolproof. So, you know, there are guys that you can still build an interesting team while finding ways to compete.
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Exactly. That's where I'm getting to it. You know, the Bucks are a team that were criticized in some ways for the fact that their owner always wanted to try to be, in the playoffs, get the eighth seed. Like, he was going to die any day. He wanted to, like, see a competitive team out there. But as a matter of principle, they tried every year. And even the year that they were bad, it wasn't because they tried to be
bad. They wanted to win 40.
Yeah, a lot of guys got hurt.
Yeah,
and it was a
15.
Weird season. But they tried, and you know what? It meant that they didn't have to go through, once they hit on some of those picks, they didn't have to then go through another three-year process of bringing guys around them, because they already had real NBA players on the rest of that roster. And that's, in hindsight, why last year's emergence wasn't all that surprising for the Bucks, because they were still just a year or two removed from being a team that was consistently expected to win 40 to 45 games. And oh, by the way, that's what they're doing now. It's just that they've got high upside guys that can bring them into the 50-win range. So the 76ers, you know, it takes more than just finding that one superstar. And I worry that by the time that they figure out that they've got that guy, that they'll have had so much roster churn around them that A, won't be a situation that anyone will want to stay in.
Right.
But that it will not be a stable foundation to be able to build around that guy so that they can succeed within the window of time that you expect young guys to start contributing.
So when I look at the Sixers, there's a couple things. I mean, we shouldn't have to talk about them this much, but they Hinkie makes them interesting.
Yeah.
I get sucked into this because there's a lot of theoretical things to talk about here. But when you hear veterans or retired players talk mm-hmm. about their time in the league, they often bring up how important it was for them to play. They had their vet.
Yeah.
Their guy that showed him the ropes, the guy that kind of showed him life in the NBA. And when I was on this playoff squad, we did this and this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you, young buck, that when we do it, like, we do it this way here.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important that Kevin Garnett is back with the Sixers or back with the T-Wolves. You look at the 76ers roster. Who's the vet?
Karl Landry.
He just got there. He just got there with Stauskas.
The great Karl Landry, who has a long career of success with Sacramento on three different stints.
Had that one nice run in Golden State.
Yeah.
But you look at who was the vet before Landry? It was Jason Richardson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I like Brett Brown. It's a good coach.
Yeah.
He's really smart.
Yeah.
Gets him to play hard.
Mm-hmm.
But who's the guy that even has any idea what it's like to win in the NBA?
Yeah.
Who's the guy?
Who's
the guy on the coaching staff? I mean, is there anybody on the coaching staff? Let's see. Who are their coaches? Yeah. Brett Brown, assistant coach Lloyd Pierce, never played in the league. Billy Lang, nope. Eugene Burroughs, nope. Chris Babcock, nope. Sean Rooks from Arizona?
Hey.
Yeah, he played in the league a little bit. Yeah, nice little run. That's it.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I agree.
That's stupid.
You've got 15 roster spots. You can't find one of those spots for, a high character
guy who's been around, needs that NBA paycheck still.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but even like Kendrick Perkins.
Kendrick Perkins in New Orleans right now. He's filling that role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Mike Miller. You know, these guys that have just kind of kicked around,
right,
still cashing checks, friends with LeBron.
Yeah.
These guys that can at least tell Nerlens Noel it was like this when I was good.
Yeah.
And they just do not value that. And it's resulted in 20 or less wins every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to continue to do so because there's no grown-ups here.
Mm-hmm.
That's nonsense. I think they win exactly what they set out to win. Good job. Congratulations, Sam Hinkie. Enjoy that top three pick and just keep doing what you're doing. Who cares?
Yeah.
That's it. Man, I'm fired up. We're out of teams, though. Matt Milner, what you got going on, locals only style?
Hey, we've got, actually, I'm booked almost to the end of the year now. There's a lot of good
Goodness
stuff.
Goodness gracious. Yeah, well, it's that fall stretch. This is when bands kind of, they use the summer to record.
Right,
and
exactly.
Now's the time when they're all kind of releasing stuff at the same time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, we've got, I don't know what we have coming up tomorrow, but we do have a lot of good stuff coming up in the future. And I will remind everybody once again.
Archives.
Yeah. Radio Free America is the link on KXCI.org. You can listen to all of your favorite shows on KXCI archived. And then, of course, we also just have the Locals Only podcasts that are up and on the Locals Only page to listen to the live performances as well. Yeah.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Hot stuff. All right, that's going to do it for us here on Can't Wait for This Week, and we're going to keep doing this until someone tells us not to.